Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
Listen up, fantasy baseball friends. Did you know that your chances of winning on draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why you need to try Draft. No more getting crushed by the pros. More than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft. Play in a real live MLB draft right now. Be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use the promo code FELSKY. That's right, play in a real money draft for free just by using the promo code FELSKY, F-E-L-S-K-E. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it, they're even offering Hittin' Season listeners a money-back guarantee of up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and play free right now with the promo code FELSKY. Void where prohibited, must be 18 or older. See website for details. Offer must be redeemed within 14 days.
Playing a long drive! There it is! Number 500! The career 500th home run for Michael Jack Smith!
Rui slides! Rollins has won it! They stream out of the dugout! Yeah. Rollins by near third! This game is over!
It is out of here! 50th home run of the year for Ryan Howard.
Ruiz out to get it. The throw from his knees. It's in time. And it's a no-hitter. Unbelievable. Ruiz and
Howard. Oh, Chase is going to keep going. And he's safe at home plate.
Wow.
Chase Utley, you are the man. Swing and a miss. Struck him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
Now batting for the Phillies, second baseman John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 201. I am John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. I also write about fantasy baseball for numberfire.com. Follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Also follow the show on Facebook and Instagram as well. Coming up, we're going to talk about the huge Phillies-Dodgers series that just wrapped up at Citizens Bank Park. Man, did that feel like an October postseason series, didn't it? And we're going to go over some trade deadline stuff, Phil's rumors with Corey Seidman from NBC Sports Philadelphia. He's going to join us in just a minute. Going to also talk about Adam Haseley and his resurgence at AA, the former number one pick, first-round draft pick, doing quite well in the minors this year. And I'm going to give you the very first installment of the Hittin' Season Top 10, where I break down who I think are the top 10 teams in order in Major League Baseball right now. Plus, I will have your stat of the week. But again, just a reminder, folks, if this is the only Phillies podcast you're getting every week and you want more Hittin' Season, you want more Phil's podcasts, well, then become a Patreon member of Hittin' Season. Why don't you? Go to patreon.com/hittin'season. And for $5 a month, becoming a Patreon member and signing up on the $5 a month tier, you will get a bonus podcast on Sunday nights featuring myself, Liz Rocher, and Justin Clue from The Good Fight, where we do another Hittin' Season talking about the weekend series. And in the middle of the week, you can hear Justin and Liz and their show Continued Success, which takes a look at the 1993 and 2008 Phils, as well as the current team. And, you know, they talk about some current day stuff in addition to the 10th anniversary of 2008 and the 25th anniversary of 1993. But some great stuff there. And I want to also encourage you to follow Justin's other Phillies podcast called The Dirty Inning. Be subscribed to that podcast on Apple Podcasts. Download, rate, and review. All that good stuff. Again, go to patreon.com/hittin'season to get the bonus Phillies content and become a $5 a month tier member, and you will get all the good stuff every Sunday night and in the middle of the week with Continued Success with Justin and Liz. All right, let's get to this Phils-Dodgers series. What a series by the Phillies. It didn't look like it was going to go too well in the first game as the Phillies lost to the Dodgers, but then winning the last two, and the Phillies now 57-44 on the season, 13 games over 500, and a game and a half up on the Atlanta Braves, who did not play on Wednesday. They have the second-best record in the National League, the Phillies do, trailing only the Cubs' 59-42 record. The Cubs suddenly 17 games over 500. Chicago looking pretty good this year once again. The one thing that I think you can take away from this series against the Dodgers is that while I still do think the Dodgers are a better team than the Phillies can play with anybody. The Phillies are not going anywhere. This is going to be a team that's in the conversation for the rest of the year because, as you saw with LA, they don't quit. They have mental toughness. They have talent. And they are not going to go away in this National League playoff picture. The Phillies actually took the season series from the Dodgers 6-5. Remember, they split that four-game series in Los Angeles back in June and then took 2 of 3 this week in Philadelphia. And, you know, the point was made to me online on Twitter by a couple different people. You can't help but notice how in the first inning of every game in this series, the Phillies fell behind. And a lot of times it was due to careless defensive play. It was due to poor pitching. But most of the time it was just stupid mistakes, dumb errors, stuff we've seen the Phillies do all year this year. And yet, despite continuing to fall in holes in the first and second game of the series, the Phillies came back each and every time. Now, they couldn't pull it off in the series opener against the Dodgers, but they did in game number two. And the game number three on Wednesday was just a really nice, comfortable win. Not the kind of win you don't usually see from the Phillies against a good team like the Dodgers. But, you know, let's take you through this series. On Monday, remember the team fell behind 4-1 in that ball game. They came back to take a 5-4 lead on a 3-run bomb by Rhys Hoskins, who had a terrific series against the Dodgers. Odubel Herrera gave them the lead in that game, a 5-4 lead with a solo shot. He went back-to-back with Hoskins. Unfortunately, the team couldn't finish it off. The Dodgers scored 3 runs late to win it 7-6, but it was a great comeback by the team. They just looked dead for a while there, and in the middle innings, the Phillies came back. They did it again the following night on Tuesday. They fell behind 4-1 again and then got 3 runs in the 7th inning. A Jorge Alfaro home run tied things up and then scored 3 in the 16th inning with Trevor Plouffe getting the walk-off hit off of position player Kike Hernandez. It was just so many managerial decisions went into that game, and I love the fact after the game that Gabe Kapler said, "We had worked so hard to come back in that game. They just didn't want to blink." And the Dodgers blinked first. They went to a position player pitching before the Phillies did. The Phillies went to Vince Velasquez in the 15th inning to try and get some outs, and it worked out. The bullpen went 11 innings in that game. They have really turned it around, this bullpen. It's unbelievable from 1 month to the next how much better these relievers are than they were last month. The best ERA in baseball in the month of July for a bullpen belongs to the Philadelphia Phillies. Can you imagine saying that a month ago when I believe they had the worst ERA in baseball? This just goes to show you how volatile bullpens are. Now, maybe if you're the New York Yankees and you knew coming into the year you had 4 all-stars in that bullpen that you were going to be okay. But the Phillies didn't have that. They've got a lot of young guys, and we know with bullpens that they can oftentimes be unstable. Normally it's year over year, not necessarily month to month, but the Phillies bullpen did a tremendous job on Tuesday. Vince Velasquez came in and gave the team some much needed relief, and then in the 16th inning off of Kike Hernandez, Trevor Plouffe with a huge 3-run home run to give the Phillies the second game of the series after they had fallen behind 3 runs. I mean, again, it just, you don't often expect one game like that to carry over to the other, but in this case, it really did seem to energize the Phillies, and it did seem to wear down the Dodgers, because on Wednesday, just less than 12 hours after the game on Tuesday finished up, the Phillies and Dodgers were back at it again, and they raced out to a big 6-1 lead. They actually fell behind 1-0 in the first inning thanks to some pretty terrible defensive catching work by Andrew Knapp, but a big home run by Rhys Hoskins in the bottom of the first got them even right away, and then 5 runs in the 5th inning drove Walker Buehler from the game, a very good young pitcher for the Dodgers. They drove him out of the game. A 3-run triple by Carlos Santana broke it open, but there was also a Scott Kingery solo home run in that inning. And you had a big performance from Jake Arrieta. in the series finale as the Phillies won 6-3. It was a huge performance by Arrieta, saving the bullpen after it had gone 11 innings the night before. Sir Anthony Dominguez didn't look sharp once again, but got a four-out save for the Phils, and they take 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers. And I think Rhys Hoskins said it best after the game. The debate about this team is over. This is a good team. And we should all accept the fact. Any Phillies fans out there who have been kind of holding back, who have been wary to fully embrace this team, whether it's because you don't like the manager, whether it's because you don't like all the low batting averages, whether it's because, understandably, the defense makes you nervous, whether it's because on a night-to-night basis it can look like this team isn't very good, but too often here in Philadelphia, we take an NFL mentality to each and every game of a baseball season. And we got to stop doing that, guys. We've got to stop taking each one of these 162 games and making sweeping generalizations on the team because they lose a game. There's 162 of these things. I mean, obviously, we were all wringing our hands after the opener on Monday because they had, you know, they had not played very well against the Padres, even though they'd won 2 out of 3. They entered the All-Star break having lost 2 of 3 to the Marlins. I mean, this was supposed to be a softer part of the schedule, and now you have the Dodgers coming into town. Well, what do you know? The last two games of the series, the Phillies win, the last one comfortably. This is a good team. This is not a perfect team by any stretch of the imagination, but as we are seeing in the National League, there are no perfect teams. The Dodgers are probably the best that the National League has to offer. I'm sure Chicago Cubs fans would argue with that. The Cubs obviously have a better record. Heck, the Phillies have a better record than the Los Angeles Dodgers right now. But the Dodgers came into this series red hot. Only the Red Sox entered Wednesday with a better record than the Dodgers since May 26th. Since May 26th, the Dodgers are 21 games over 500 at 40-19. And Dave Roberts said it after the game, the Phillies outpitched him. They went toe-to-toe with the Dodgers and outplayed him in this series. Now, that's not to say the same thing would happen in the National League Division Series or the National League Championship Series were these two teams to meet in October. But this week in Philadelphia, despite all the defensive miscues, despite some of their inability to come through with runners in scoring position from time to time, despite some unevenness from the starting pitching in the first two games of the series, the Phillies took 2 games out of 3. Big part of that was Rhys Hoskins. He has 4 homers in his last 5 games and had some huge home runs in this series, especially in the first game, the game they didn't win, actually, hitting a key 3-run home run to tie the game, and then hitting a home run to tie the game in the series finale. You know, when this team for the third straight game had fallen behind in the first inning, it was only 1-0. But for Rhys Hoskins to come back, the second hitter for the Phils to smoke a ball to left center field after Andrew Knapp worked a 14 or 15 pitch at bat to lead off the game, I think it showed everybody that the Phillies were going to be in this game to, you know, for the entire way, and it gave the team a lot of confidence to know that they can come back. And Jake Arrieta led the way, holding the Dodgers in check, and man, the Dodgers come in red hot, and the Phillies just, they threw cold water on them. And now you look at the Phillies. They are 10-2-1 in their last 13 series. They've won 10 of their last 13 series and split one of them, only losing 2 of their last 13 series. They're not sweeping teams. They're not dominating teams. They're not, you know, but they are still 13 games over 500. They're slowly creeping up. And we've seen Atlanta slow down. They've definitely cooled off a little bit. And Washington still just cannot get their act together, losing 2 out of 3 to the Milwaukee Brewers this week. Now 7 full games behind the Phillies in the standings. So now the key, of course, is the Phillies following up. What do they do after a big series win like this? Do they suffer a letdown here? Do they go into Cincinnati for a 4-game series against the Reds and suddenly forget how to hit again? I mean, we've seen that with this team. This team has a lot of holes. It is imperfect, and they're going to struggle against bad teams sometimes. This team, as we've seen, they get up for the good teams, and sometimes they struggle against the bad teams, especially on the road. And while the Reds aren't going to the playoffs or anything this year, they do have a really scary lineup in the middle of it. Eugenio Suarez is having an MVP-caliber season for Cincinnati, probably the most underrated position player in the National League. They have Joey Votto, and Scooter Gennett, also extraordinarily underrated, having a fantastic power season for Cincinnati. There is some talent in that lineup that Phil's pitchers are going to have to be wary of. But this is a team the Phillies are better than. The Phillies are better than Cincinnati, and they should win 3 out of 4 against this team. Now, part of the thing is going to be, can they get their defensive issues under control? We saw some horrific defense once again against the Dodgers, and yet they managed to overcome it, as they always do. They always seem to overcome their defensive deficiencies. It's really amazing. Now, one of the other things to mention about this Dodgers series, actually, before we move on to Cincinnati, was Manny Machado coming into town. Very quiet in this series, and fans did not boo him on Monday night, which I was happy about. In Milwaukee the weekend before, they booed Manny Machado because the Baltimore Orioles didn't trade him to the Milwaukee Brewers, something that Machado had absolutely no control over, and yet Milwaukee fans booed Machado. Which, I mean, Milwaukee fans, I don't think had the best weekend with their standing ovation of Josh Hader. Listen, you want to support the player, you know, Josh Hader tweeted out some pretty racist and awful things. He's probably not a guy I would stand up and cheer during the course of a baseball game, but for the standing ovation that he got was just, it seemed completely tone deaf to what was going on. And then booing Manny Machado, obviously I think the Hader stuff was a bigger black eye for Brewers fans, but nevertheless, I mean, I didn't want Phillies fans to boo Machado because I didn't want us to look like Brewers fans. People who didn't understand how baseball worked. Luckily, fans didn't boo Machado. They gave him a very nice applause on opening night, and then otherwise were pretty indifferent toward him, which to me was fine. That's the best mix, in my opinion. I just didn't want Phillies fans to look like idiots, thinking that, you know, we don't understand exactly how baseball works, that players don't get to choose which teams that they're traded to. And I got to say, this Dodgers the Dodgers series, it felt like a playoff series. And the Phillies played the Dodgers nip and tuck. They could have swept the series, quite frankly. And, you know, we keep coming back to it. How are the Phillies doing this? How are the Phillies, with their deficiencies, doing? How are they in first place by a game and a half? How are they 13 games over 500? They have a run differential that says they should only be 4 or 5 games over 500. Well, they give themselves a bunch of chances offensively. Because they get on base, because they draw so many walks, because they force pitchers to throw so many pitches, they knock starters out of games early. They get them out before the fifth inning routinely. And then you go after the bullpens. Now, bullpens are better nowadays, but still those mid relievers, you probably want to face them more than you want to face the starters. So even when the Phillies don't cash in, even if they don't cash in on most of their opportunities, they cash in on enough of them, and they pitch well. The starters and the bullpen now are both doing the job, and pitching covers up for a lot of defensive and offensive sins. That's how it's always been in regular season baseball. The rules are a little different in the postseason, but in the regular season, if you have a decent starting pitching and a good bullpen, you can have some bad defense and you can have some up and down offensive stretches and manage to keep your head above water and play well. And that's what the Phillies are doing right now. They really are the sum of their parts. Matt Winkelmann noted this on Twitter. I thought it was an excellent point by him. You know, this is a sum-of-their-parts team. You're not going to see any of these guys near the top of the MVP balloting. But you've got Hoskins and Herrera, who are impact bats, especially when they're going well. Cesar Hernandez and Carlos Santana are valuable players. I know Santana, people like to pick on him and his low batting average. He has an OPS over 1,000 with runners in scoring position, and it's 1,201 with two outs and runners in scoring position. Carlos Santana gets big hits, guys. And the rest of the lineup does enough with different guys stepping in up occasionally. We've seen Nick Williams do that. Scott Kingery today added a big home run. And when the bullpen was down, the starting rotation was phenomenal. Now the starting rotation has struggled a little bit coming out of the All-Star break, and the bullpen is on fire. So when you get it, when you have a rotation that gives you 2.5 to 3 good starts every 5 starts every time through the rotation, and a bullpen that's doing the job, generating a lot of swing and miss, you're going to have success, and that's where the Phillies are right now. I don't know if the recipe is totally dependable, but they get key hits and they pitch well, and that covers up for some defensive problems and some unevenness on offense. I still think they need to add some pieces, and we're going to talk with Corey Seidman from NBC Sports Philadelphia here in just a second. But in a season when the Nats are still under 500 and the Phillies hold a 7-game lead on them, they hold a game and a half lead on the Atlanta Braves, they are taking advantage of these chances these other teams are giving them. And after taking 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers and heading into a weekend series in Cincinnati against the Reds, it's more of a chance for the Phillies to put even more space between their division rivals.
This ball is out of here!
Well, joining us to talk more about that unbelievable series against the Dodgers is Corey Seidman from NBC Sports Philadelphia. You can follow Corey on Twitter at CSeidmanNBCS. Corey, thanks for coming back on Hittin' Season, man. How are you?
I'm great, John. I got to see 34 innings of baseball in 3 days, so what's not to love?
Yeah, I forget you. That was quite a turnaround from Tuesday night into Wednesday afternoon. I mean, that. Have you ever been at the stadium for a game that ended that late?
You know, that was just the way that game unfolded. It was that it was speeding so quickly through the first four innings, and then as many Phillies games tend to do this season, because the team takes so many pitches, it kind of grinded to a halt. But to win that game, you know, there's nobody these days believes in momentum in baseball really anymore.
No.
Because of the old cliche that, you know, it's momentum is your next day starting pitcher. But I don't know. There has to be a demoralizing effect to the team that plays five hours and 55 minutes or whatever it was and loses that game. And, you know, we saw the Phillies come to play in the series finale where the offense, you know, continued to just pick up the timely hit. And Carlos Santana, who has been much maligned this entire season, you know, for his batting average by a portion of the fan base, came through again with a runner, you know, with the runners in scoring position situation. He's been one of the, you know, most productive players in baseball with two outs and runners in scoring position this season, Santana.
Yeah, he has. And he's gotten, you're right, maligned unfairly. I think we still, you know, people still look at that batting average and it's an ugly number. There's no doubt about it. But the on-base percentage, people, it's just going to take a while, I think, Corey, for people to come around to the idea of not looking at the batting average first and looking at the on-base percentage first. And I think for people who are more in line with today's thinking about the statistics that are valued more by front offices and for people like Gabe Kapler and Matt Klentak and you and me, I think we know that on-base percentage means more than batting average, but it's going to be really hard, especially in Philadelphia, a city that likes tradition, to get away from looking at the batting average first. And I think that's why there's some, for a team that has the second best record in the National League right now as we enter late July, why there is still a lot of discontent among fans with this, especially with the position players.
Yeah, well, you know, what I would point to first off the batting average on base percentage conversation is I'm not saying a walk is as good as a hit. That's not what I'm saying.
No.
But what I am saying is that the last time I looked, the National League average was .237.
Yeah.
So you kind of just have to look at everything through different glasses. Pitching's different. The game itself is different. In terms of, you know, the Phillies outperforming their win expectancy and being in this position where they're 57-44 at the time of this and, you know, second-best record in the NL, it's crazy because if you look at the offensive numbers, the defensive numbers, and even some of the pitching numbers, the Phillies are below average. They've just been able to pick up timely hits late in games, really. I mean, they have been a league-average offense in the 7th through 9th innings. So while things haven't, you know, gotten off to great starts early in games, there's a reason that they have a 20-9 record in one-run games. You know, it's a combination of correct bullpen usage by Gabe Kapler, you know, the execution, especially Sir Anthony Dominguez picked up another 4-out save today. You know, that's how you arrive at this record. And when you look at the scope of the National League, it doesn't matter how the Phillies got to 57-44 because they're 57-44 at this very point, and there's no team in the NL that looks markedly better than the Phillies. And I think they kind of showed that in the series against the Dodgers where, you know, the big storylines were Chase Utley and Manny Machado. Well, Manny Machado went 2-for-14 in the series. He was a non-factor aside from the one at bat in the first game.
Yeah, and we saw that the Phillies do have a couple of star players in this lineup. Reese Hoskins had a terrific series against the Dodgers. And, you know, he's such a funny guy because he's so streaky, especially when it comes to the power. And there are some, I don't think anybody really took it seriously. Nobody, I don't think, had any serious worries about the home run derby screwing up his swing. He seems to think, I saw some quotes after the game, that he seems to think that the home run derby may have helped him with his power swing. He is certainly hitting the long ball and hitting the ball with more authority since coming out of the All-Star break. Reese Hoskins is a guy, if he gets hot, can be a star player and carry this team.
Yeah, that's just a fact. And, you know, I thought it was pretty interesting. I talked to Reese Hoskins today in the clubhouse, and we're so used to that narrative. The home run derby affects a guy's swing. A few weeks ago in Baltimore, Gabe Kapler said that he thinks that's just a story the baseball world tells itself. I thought that was a pretty good quote.
Yeah.
But, you know, Hoskins said that he thinks that the derby helped him because it made him a little bit more aggressive to his pull side, which he wanted, because he said that he hadn't been doing that as much as he wanted to earlier in the season, and it has led to more power. I mean, the one that he hit in the third game of the Dodgers series, the series finale, 400-plus footer, a no-doubter, a ball that you didn't even need to see. If you just heard it, you would know it was gone.
Yeah.
Hoskins, at the end of that Dodgers series, up to 18 homers, 65 RBI, 56 walks. I'm giving you those three numbers because there's nobody else in the National League who has at least all three of those numbers. There's nobody else in the National League who has as many – at least as many homers, RBIs, and walks as Rhys Hoskins. And he, keep in mind, he missed the 9 games with a jaw fracture. So, you know, no, it's not the insane, unprecedented power pace that he put together last summer, but he's still been a very productive player, one of the better hitters in the National League.
One of the guys who's not going to get talked a lot about, but I thought his performance in the series finale was huge, and that's Jake Arrieta. He has really been up and down as of late. He had a terrible start his last time out. And really with Jake Arrieta, you can see it's mechanics with him. When he's got his mechanics locked in and he's got his good command, he can go on a run. And I was asked, I was on the WIP morning show earlier this week, and they were asking me if what I thought of Jake Arrieta's season. Did I consider it a disappointment so far? I answered I thought it was kind of a disappointment, but also it occurred to me that he is a guy that the Phillies went and got because if he locks it in and pitches like he did in the series finale against Los Angeles for the rest of the season, he can be a guy who has an ERA in the mid-2s and dominates for 2 months at a time. That's what today looked like. Today looked like that Jake Arrieta had it absolutely locked in against a really good Dodgers starting lineup. How important to you is Arrieta the rest of the way here?
Well, you know, it's interesting because the Phillies have gotten to this point where they're the second best team in the National League record-wise without Jake Arrieta dominating.
Yeah.
Jake Arrieta has not made 3 consecutive quality starts all season. Quality starts being 6 innings or more, 3 earned runs or less.
Right.
He hasn't made 3 in a row. And I point that out just to illustrate he just has not gotten on a roll one way or the other. You know, June was a really bad month for him. So, okay, he has had a bad streak. But we just haven't seen him rattle off a series of starts where it's 7 innings, 2 runs, efficiency, a lot of ground balls. I was interested to see how his matchup against the Dodgers was going to go because the Dodgers hit the ball on the ground less than any other team. They have a bunch of hitters who their goal is to go up there and launch the ball. Jock Peterson,
yeah.
Cody Bellinger, Max Muncy. We didn't see Justin Turner in the series. He's another guy who follows that philosophy. And Jake Arrieta was still able to do his thing. You know, it's weird because he has an ERA of 3.45, and yet that ERA feels like it's better than it should be, doesn't it?
It does.
But doesn't it feel like Arrieta's ERA should be at least closer to 4? And, of course, that's because of all the unearned runs. Who knows how his season would have gone if not for all the errors behind him. There's, you know, a good chance that the Phillies win a couple more of those games if that doesn't happen. But to your point about them signing him because when he's able to lock it in, this is what he does, my thing with that is, you know that I love stats just as much as anybody, but there are certain guys who, when they go out every fifth day, it doesn't matter what their numbers are. It matters what their skill set is.
Yeah.
So, like, for example, John Gray, a guy who, in my opinion, has some of the best stuff in baseball, but an extremely high ERA. On any given night, he could go out 7 innings, 2 hits, 11 strikeouts. And I'm not saying Jake Arrieta is going to have that many Ks in any given start this season, but on any given night, he can be as locked in as anybody and, you know, get 2 pitch outs with ground ball after ground ball. He's a major key in the second half because if you can get an Arrieta and a combo locked in, that can carry you.
Absolutely. I think he's one of the most important players here in the second half for the Phillies because they have been led by the pitching. And I've said this on Twitter a bunch of times. You know, the Phillies' offense is up and down. The defense is absolutely atrocious. But the starting pitching has been good more often than not. And last thing I want to talk to you about before we talk about the trade deadline real quick is the bullpen. What a turnaround from the month of June to July. What they did in the second game of the series on Tuesday night against the Dodgers was terrific. And then following it up on Wednesday, really, they've been tremendous. The lowest ERA in baseball in the month of July, the Phillies bullpen. I would not have seen that coming. What's the difference? Is it just adding Pat Neshek into the mix?
I was going to say yes, Pat Neshek. I think that because of like the usage restrictions and because Pat Neshek isn't like, if Pat Neshek threw 98 miles per hour and had the numbers he did, everybody would be talking about him all the time because he's like a funky, you know, submariner and,
yeah.
And he it's just an, you know, mostly anonymous guy. It falls under the radar, but 52 out of 54 scoreless appearances as a Philly. It's
That's
ridiculous.
Crazy. Crazy.
And, you know, so getting him back is the equivalent of the A's adding Jeurys Familia. It's the equivalent of the Indians getting Brad Hand. It's the same thing. So there's that. And also, you know, Austin Davis, a guy that I want to point out because the Phillies have been trying to develop a left-handed reliever for a long time. I'm not saying that Adam Morgan hasn't had flashes, but he hasn't been like a consistent guy. And Austin Davis is not a lefty specialist. He actually has reverse platoon splits, but he's really good. And he can give you more than an inning, which is extremely valuable the way that Gabe Kapler's been using his bullpen. I think that, you know, when you think about the ways that Kapler has made positive contributions and kind of maybe earned this team a couple extra wins than it deserves. I think it's because of the bullpen usage and the fact that he uses guys unlike a lot of other managers. You'll have Austin Davis get you five outs. You'll have Victor Arano go two full innings. It's been pretty impressive. And I think the opportunities all these guys have been given to do that has made them even better.
Yeah, and credit the players too, the pitchers too, for working their way through struggles. And I think the confidence that Kapler showed this team in the press, especially the bullpen, in the press during their struggles has helped them here in July. You know, I think they're just starting to believe in themselves and coming into their own. It's been a huge key, especially as the starting pitching has not been as good here in the second half of the season. Still a long way to go, of course. Now let's talk some trade deadline stuff here, Corey. A couple new names have emerged here on Wednesday as we're speaking. The first is Adam Jones. From a couple different outlets, it looks like the Phillies are making a push to add the Baltimore center fielder. Obviously, if he came to Philadelphia, it would most likely be to play right field. What do you think about that as a fit?
So when I first saw it, I didn't think it made much sense because offensively he's just everything the Phillies are not. Adam Jones never walks. He's walked 24 times per year over the last seven seasons.
Yeah.
He's the prototypical 281 hitter who has a 305 on base percentage.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. That, to me, I was like, Adam Jones doesn't seem to make a whole ton of sense. The thing is, if it costs you very little, why not do it? Like,
sure.
Curtis Granderson, someone that I wrote about last week, Curtis Granderson potentially being a fit, and then we have seen that he's been connected to the Phillies. And the reason Curtis Granderson makes sense is because fourth outfielder, he's better than anybody currently on your bench. He can give you, play selection, power, a little bit of speed, a little bit of defense. In the same ilk, Adam Jones, him being a rental player, two-month player, and having the worst season he's had in a decade, this is the worst offensive season he's had since 2008. I think he has a 727 OPS.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been a below-average offensive player. But if it costs nothing because he's a rental having a bad year, and I don't mean nothing, I just mean something insignificant, then you do it. Of course
yeah.
You do it. Because, over the second half of the season, he could get hot. You could bat a guy like that four or five. I think, obviously, that lengthens the lineup on some nights. It's just, when do you, how much playing time do you give him? If you play him over Nick Williams, Nick Williams over the last 6 weeks has been a better offensive player than Adam Jones. And, you could talk about platoon stuff, but over the course of Adam Jones's career, he's been significantly worse against lefties. His OPS is like 75 points lower against lefties than it is against righties. So, yes, if the cost is insignificant, you do it. I just think that there are probably better fits out there for the Phillies in terms of adding a bat. Unless, there's Adam Jones in addition to someone else.
Yeah, I like Adam Jones as a complimentary piece to Nick Williams, as a right-handed bat off the bench even. I think especially if all you have to do is give up a prospect in, down near the bottom of your top 30 or something like that, I think I would do that and give Adam Jones a start or two per week, continue to start Nick Williams four or five times a week, and that way you have a nice right-handed bat off the bench on the days he doesn't start. To me, that's the way I would utilize Adam Jones if they were going to get him.
Yeah, and there's always the Phillies-Orioles tie. All the guys in the office came from the Orioles. And the fact that Adam Jones, people will always dismiss this phrase, but veteran presence in the clubhouse,
yeah.
It does matter. Trust me, it does matter, especially when it comes to a pennant race for a young team.
Well, another guy along that vein is I've seen in a couple different areas just before I spoke to you, Chris Archer. The Phillies are supposedly going to be scouting Chris Archer's start on Sunday in Tampa. And this is a guy who has great stuff. He's had a couple really good seasons in the past, but he's got a 4.30 ERA this year. The Phillies wailed on him earlier in the season. And for the cost it would take to get him, because he's controllable for a few years, he's 30 years old. I guess that's not as big a deal now, seeing as how the window is open for the Phillies a little bit sooner than we thought. But I got to think it's going to take a price similar to what they were willing to pay for Manny Machado. And I don't know. I know the FIP is in the mid-threes every year, but his ERA is always half a run to almost a full run higher than his FIP every single year. I'm not enamored with Chris Archer, although I do think he would be a good addition again in the locker room.
Okay, so I watch a lot of Chris Archer starts. There are certain guys that I just enjoy watch pitching, and I like don't miss their starts. I'm a complete baseball nerd, and so I'm very well versed in what Chris Archer is, and he is very impressive. He has
great
amazing
stuff.
Amazing swing and miss stuff. The issue is that he gives up a lot of homers because when he elevates his fastball, it's gone. And so you kind of took the words out of my mouth. It's a conundrum with Chris Archer because, yeah, he makes sense to go after if you're not overpaying, if you're not paying 105 cents on the dollar. But because of his contract, he is a really valuable piece. I don't think it's happening. I don't think that Chris Archer would be the trade. Yeah, I think this Phillies team, it would make a whole lot more sense to go after someone like Jay Happ.
Mm-hmm.
2 months rental, completely different look than anyone in your rotation,
yeah.
Cost way less. You know, I think that's much more realistic.
And everything we're hearing is that he's close to being moved somewhere, although we don't know where. So last question, Corey. What's the Phil's greatest need in the trade market right now? It seemed like a relief pitcher was an absolute necessity last month, but given the way the bullpen is pitching, it doesn't seem to be as dire a need. Shortstop is obviously a big problem. Michael Franco's emergence at third base at least makes you think they don't need something at the hot corner. They could add in the outfield. They're one of the worst teams as far as right fielders are concerned, although, like you mentioned, Williams has definitely picked it up over the last month and a half. What is this team's biggest need to you right now in the trade market?
I think they need two bats. I think you need someone else who has the ability to play shortstop. And I'm not saying that because, I'm overreacting to Scott Carey's rookie season. But you just need somebody else to play shortstop. You need a backup shortstop. You need something in case Carey gets hurt. So when you look at those available guys, Eduardo Escobar is the name we keep hearing about.
Yeah.
I am not the biggest go trade for Eduardo Escobar guy. And the reason I say that, average defender, swings at everything, is having a great year, is having a career year. He leads the majors in doubles. He's hitting .365 with runners in scoring position. But I think that he's like a sell high guy for the Twins right now.
Yeah.
So I never like the side that is buying the player who is being sold at his height. So there's probably cheaper options. Like I look at someone like Asdrubal Cabrera is perceived as a shortstop but hasn't played shortstop this season. Yonder Solarte has played shortstop in the past. I think he's played a little this season, but is he actually a defensive upgrade over Kingery? Probably not, but you just need somebody else to play that position.
Yeah.
I like Solarte because of the versatility, first, second, third, short, switch hitter, power. Again, you add him, he's better than anybody on your bench. Whit Merrifield is another player I really like. First, second, center, right field, left field experience, and a spark plug type player. It would almost be like having another version of Cesar Hernandez, just with a little more pop.
Yeah.
More gap power. Again, he, Whit Merrifield, like Archer, would cost a lot in a trade because of the years of control in addition to the skill set. But yeah, two bets. I think that, you know, if the Phillies were to get Granderson, Solarte, and Happ, for example, get three players from the Blue Jays. That's an effective trade deadline because you just upgraded four positions. You upgraded your bench with Granderson. You upgraded the infield situation with Solarte. You upgraded the rotation with Happ. And then the addition of Happ, if Nick Pivetta, for example, isn't involved in the trade, would probably move to the bullpen, thus giving you another power arm in the bullpen. So, you know, there's a lot of different routes the Phillies can go here, and I think that's why they've been so patient.
Yeah, sign me up for that. I'm down with that, Corey. Absolutely. It certainly seems as though they are going to do something here, given how well the team is playing, the position that they've put themselves in. They've given themselves the opportunity to be buyers here at the trade deadline. And, man, we are talking about pennant race baseball in late July. This is just some serious fun, man. Corey Seidman from NBC Sports Philadelphia. Follow Corey on Twitter at CSeidmanNBCS. Thanks, Corey, for coming back on Hittin' Season, man. I appreciate it.
You got it, John.
This ball is out of here.
Well, Philly's front office folks have taken some heat over the last couple of years for some what are perceived missteps in the first round of the Major League Baseball draft. We know that Cornelius Randolph has not worked out very well. The jury is still out on J.P. Crawford, although I am probably more optimistic than most. Mickey Moniak is having an okay season. He's doing a little bit better, but obviously as the number one overall pick in the draft, not performing the way you would hope a number one overall pick would. Of course, that draft, just as we are seeing now, turned out to be, and what everybody knew it at that time, was a very, very, very weak draft. And really, Nick Senzel of the Reds is the only player among the top 10 or 15 taken who right now is looking like a surefire major league star. But in that draft, Mickey Moniak going number one overall, there just was no consensus number one, and it's not really the Phillies' fault. They took a guy that they thought that they could sign for relatively cheap, knowing that it was a weak draft, and, you know, trying to give extra money to a second rounder and Kevin Gowdy, and unfortunately he's been injured. So that draft just hasn't worked out. Nevertheless, the season after the Moniak pick, Adam Haseley was selected by the Phillies, and he looks like he is really coming on. He looks like a guy who I think is going to play at the major league level, and I think play an important role for a team at the major league level. Now, he's been promoted to Double A in 13 games there. This is a very small sample size, and we know that Redding is a very, very favorable park for hitters. Nevertheless, he's hitting .436, .577, .718 with an OPS of 1,295 in 13 games at Reading, with 3 home runs and 8 RBI. He on the season now, 92 games between High A and Double A, 406 plate appearances, hitting .314, .373, .447 with an .820 OPS, 8 home runs, 46 RBI, 15 doubles, and 5 triples so far for Adam Haseley this season. This after a very, very slow start to the season. And we saw that he wasn't walking at all in the first month of the season. He has picked that up tremendously. His plate discipline has gotten better. Adam Haseley growing at Double A. And you always figure with a talented player, the numbers are going to spike at Double A. That's just how it works with Reading. It's a park designed, or just whether it was designed that way or not, it's definitely favorable to hitters. And I'm going to have going to see if we can't get Michael Ventola back on the podcast. Hopefully for next week. I want to talk to he's the Reading Fightins. I think he's now doing play by play for the Reading Fightins. But I want to see if we can't get him on the podcast. He's a friend of the podcast. He's come on every year and given us an update on what's going on in Reading. I specifically want to talk to him about Adam Haseley. I think next week we'll get an update on how Adam Haseley is looking and some of the other folks in Reading. When I'll see if Michael's available next week, and if not, we'll do it real soon. One of the things I mentioned a couple of weeks ago when Adam Haseley got promoted and was doing so well at Double A, could he be a September call-up with the Phillies? Because the rosters will expand, and anybody on the 40-man roster can be brought up. I think he could be. If he hits like this over the next month and a half of the season, if he hits like this through August, I honestly think you could see Adam Haseley. I don't know how much playing time he'll get. He might only get like 1 or 2 plate appearances, but he might be a guy you could bring off the bench once in a while as a September call-up. I think if he's hitting like this, if he continues to hit, say, over .300 with an on-base over .350 and a slugging percentage over .450 in Reading, those are season numbers we've seen from him right now. Obviously, he's not going to maintain a .436, .577, .718 slash line in Reading. But I think if you can get .300, .350, .450 from him in Reading, I'd call him up. What's the harm? There's no harm whatsoever in calling up Adam Haseley for a handful of plate appearances in September if that happens. So right now, it's really encouraging to see the number one draft pick from 2 years ago by the Phils, Adam Haseley, doing quite well, performing well in Reading. And hopefully, like I said, we'll talk to Michael Ventola from the Reading Fightins coming up here in the next week or two to give us more of an update on what's going on with Adam Haseley in Reading.
This ball is out of here!
All right, one last thing before we get out of here this week. I'm going to be doing this the rest of the season as the last thing I do before the stat of the week. And as we're approaching the postseason, as we're getting into a pennant race, I think this is a good time to break out the hitting season top 10. I'm going to run down my list of the top 10 teams in Major League Baseball in order and see where the Phillies fall. And think about it to yourself. You know, where would you put the Phillies right now among the top 10 teams in baseball? You know, we're Phillies fans. We probably have them ranked a little higher than a lot of teams, but these are my power rankings. This is my top 10. I can do it whatever I damn well please. Okay? So I have the Houston Astros at number 1. They have the best run differential in baseball. I know the Boston Red Sox have a better record, but the Houston Astros are the defending champs. I think they have the most complete team in baseball. They still need a ninth inning guy. I thought they were going to get Zach Britton. They did not. Instead, he went to the Yankees. I think one of the reasons the Yankees were so aggressive on Britton is to keep him away from Houston. But there are still some relief pitchers on the market that the Astros could go to. But they demoted Ken Giles a couple of weeks ago. And since then, they have been looking for a ninth inning guy, somebody to close down games. As we know, as fans of the Phillies, you need a dependable ninth inning guy, especially in the postseason. But for my money right now, the Houston Astros, the defending champs, are still the number one team in baseball. I have the Boston Red Sox at number 2. They have the second best run differential and the best record in baseball. I still think the Red Sox could use some more help in the bullpen as well. They were also players for Zach Britton and maybe another starter for Boston, but that offense is no joke. JD Martinez, Mookie Betts, Xander Bogaerts, I'm forgetting people. I know it's just that is a crazy good team that the Red Sox have. The Phillies are going to be facing those guys coming up in the next week or so. I have the New York Yankees at number 3. Even though they lost 2 out of 3 to the Phillies, I still think the Los Angeles Dodgers, with Manny Machado on board, with Clayton Kershaw, I still think that lineup, that was a scary lineup, is the fourth best team in baseball, and I do think they're the best team in the National League right now. I think the Chicago Cubs aren't far behind. I think the Cubs are right on their heels, and I have them at number 5 overall. I have the Cleveland Indians at number 6. And maybe this is a little high, but this is where I have the Phillies slotted in. I have them at number 7. I almost flip-flopped the Phillies with the number 8 team, my number 8 team, the Milwaukee Brewers. Just because of how the Brewers have pounded the Phillies this year, you look at the run differential between the two teams and the run differential between these two teams when they played each other, the Brewers looked like a better team than the Phillies, but the Brewers have some pitching issues now. One of their starting pitchers, Suter, is out for the year with Tommy John surgery. They're going to need to add another starter. It doesn't look like Zach Davies is going to be coming back anytime soon. So the Brewers' starting rotation, I think there are some issues to go there, and I think the Phillies' rotation is better than theirs. That Brewers lineup, man, that is no joke, and the Brewers are a really good team. I'm going to, for now, have the Phillies at 7 and the Brewers at 8, but I would not argue if you flip-flop those two teams. I have the Seattle Mariners at number 9, and I really debated whether or not to even have these guys in the top 10. Their record is fantastic, but they have a run differential of 0. Yet they're like 19 games over 500. It's really, what a weird, they have 20 one-run wins. You think the Phillies have a lot of one-run wins? Look at the Seattle Mariners, more than the Phils. And it's been sustainable so far. I have no reason to think the Mariners aren't going to be in the conversation in the American League for the rest of the year. I have them at number 9. And finally, at number 10, I have the Atlanta Braves, the team right behind the Phillies, just a game and a half back. The Braves have kind of struggled a little bit as of late, as Mike Foltynewicz and Sean Newcomb have struggled a little bit, but I still think they are one of the top 10 teams. The team just missing out. I almost had the Oakland A's in the top 10. I love what the A's are doing this year. They're a fun team to watch, but don't think they are able to quite crack any of the teams on that top 10 list. And we'll do this every week. Some of these teams may move around a little bit, but right now for me, that is the hitting season top 10.
This ball is out of here.
And now it's time for your stat of the week. Chase Utley has played his last regular season game at Citizens Bank Park ever. Now, maybe we will see them in the playoffs, but as far as regular season games go, that is it for Chase Utley. And with Utley's Citizens Bank Park career in the books, he finishes a career 291 hitter in 766 regular season games. And if you didn't catch it, if you're not a Patreon member of the podcast, Liz Rocher and I did a tribute podcast to Chase Utley on the latest episode of Continued Success, which came out this week. Go to patreon.com/hittingseason, become a $5 a month Patreon member, get on that tier, and you can get Continued Success as well as the bonus podcast of Hittin' Season every Sunday night. Continued Success comes out in the middle of the week. Usually Justin and Liz host that show, but this week it was me and Liz, and we did 45 minutes of nothing but Chase Utley talk. That's something you're going to want to listen to. So go to patreon.com/hittingseason to get Continued Success and listen to our Chase Utley tribute. It was a fun show to do. Folks, that'll do it for this episode of Hittin' Season, episode number 201. My thanks to Corey Seidman for coming on the podcast once again this week. If you haven't done so, gang, head on over to Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to Hittin' Season. Please rate and review the show as well. If you like us, give us a 5-star rating. That goes a long way to helping other Phillies fans find the podcast, and I would appreciate it as well. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I'll talk to y'all next week right here on Hittin' Season.
I'm Michael Kist of Bleeding Green Nation, and I invite you, gentle listener, to join us for the best analysis of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles in the business. BGN Radio provides you with the most informative preview shows, and the Kist and Solak show dives deep into all the scheme and X and O details you could ever want. Plus discussions with the industry's brightest minds, including former NFL players, and press conferences from the Eagles coaching staff to keep you up to date and informed every step of the way. Subscribe to Bleeding Green Nation today. Fly, Eagles, fly.